This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Rather than putting sort of taxation arrangements on things and trying to redistribute wealth that way, why not have people getting the wealth from their own businesses? It's not just about big corporations. It's about people having a stake in the place they work.
Among the inherent contradictions of capitalism, according to Karl Marx, is that private profit rests on the backs of workers who gain little from the arrangement, other than perpetuating the wealth of those to whom they sell their labor. But there's a movement afoot to mitigate that contradiction. In business schools and increasingly in actual capital enterprises, people are talking about and working toward a triple bottom line, which considers not only private profit, but creating positive social and environmental impact. This week on Sea Change Radio, we talk with two professionals involved in this new way of doing business. First, we take a look at a small textile entrepreneur who's cultivating responsible sourcing for the clothes we wear. Next, we talk to a sustainability consultant about how he helps businesses employ alternative ways to define success. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by my friend Lydia Wendt. She is the CEO and founder of the California Cloth Foundry. Lydia, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex. It's good to be here.
So what is the California Cloth Foundry?
So the California Cloth Foundry is a company that I formed to bring 100% sustainable, triple bottom line textiles as well as apparel to not only brands like the North Face, where I did the backyard hoodie, but also to bring apparel that is completely trustworthy, an American supply chain, environmentally, socially, and financially sustainable for our local community, for you, the consumer, to know honestly what's in your clothing and what's in your textiles.
And just to be clear, your company is not selling direct to consumers. You're selling the raw materials, the more sustainable raw materials to other manufacturers, correct?
That's how I began the company, yes. I have been selling textiles not only to small brands, independent brands, like my friends up in Portland, Older Brother, as well as Fiji Jeans. And that I did combining two nonprofits and creating a program for them, completely sustainable and local and environmentally sound. So now, in the next few months, I will be launching a brand. I've photographed the first tiny capsule collection of apparel direct to consumer that you can purchase from my website.
So when you say local, what are some of the more challenging fibers and materials to get in Northern California? And when we say locally, how far do those tentacles reach?
So the product development that I did for the backyard hoodie for North Face was for the fiber shed. And the fiber shed is fibers grown within 150-mile radius. We couldn't produce the garment from fibers grown in within 150-mile radius in that parameter, in that, I guess, that boundary, because there are no spinners that can on the West Coast. So I actually took the supply chain to the East Coast, to the Carolinas, where we have a deep history in cotton. And this is a cotton hoodie. So I don't work specifically within cotton, but California has does grow the best cotton in America. And so I purchased cotton from Sustainable Cotton Project. It's called Cleaner Cotton. It's really gorgeous and toxin reductions. They've been working with the state water for 12 years to reduce the toxins in the water and the air and the soil in the Central Valley. And also bringing it to the Carolinas was the only way that I could produce it within America.
And as you've been learning more about sustainable practices and ecologically sound practices here in the States, I imagine you've also been able to learn more about what to avoid. Why don't you highlight some of the countries and the fibers that have led to for a need for your company? Where are some of the sore points? There's got to be something wrong when you go to a Target and you get a dozen tube socks for $5. Something right. is not right there.
It's all labor. The cotton, whether it's wool, even if you're speaking about, wool, they crowd the fields with too many sheep and they dip them in large amounts of pesticide to keep the labor down, to keep the yield high. It's the same with the cotton. It's the same with plastic fibers. If you're talking about plastic clothing, that's what I like to call it, because it is all the polyesters that they add to the blends, to the cotton blends, to make it even less expensive. This is petroleum-based, and it's cheap labor.
So knowing what you know, why don't you walk us through a shopping spree of your own, if you mm-hmm. can. One where you're limited to, let's say, a big box retailer. First, let's take you to a Target. What aisles would you avoid, and where would you maybe think, okay, I could maybe buy this for my daughter because X, Y, or Z? Is there anything in a Target in the clothing store?
Philosophically, no, I would not go and purchase something at a Target, even though they do sell organic cotton clothing.
What's the matter with that organic cotton clothing, or is it more their whole business model, which is anathema to you?
It's the business model. Here's a little known fact. The production of organic cotton globally has dropped dramatically, but yet the products that state that they're made from and with organic cotton has grown enormously. And I can't really cite numbers right now, but let's say there's 1 million pounds of cotton grown that's organic globally. There's 3 million pounds of garments produced stating on their label that they contain organic cotton. Now, there's a lot of waste involved, so that equation means that there is some mismarked items. And the majority of organic cotton is grown offshore. Their policies, their regulations are not as strict as in America. And the farmers that are growing the organic cotton are not being monitored. They're not being well compensated for it. They're just paying the least amount for the highest yield of organic cotton that they can bring through the supply chain and put on a label and sell on the shelves of Target and, Walmart.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Lydia Wendt. She's the CEO and founder of California Cloth Foundry. Lydia, tell us a little bit about how your company's values would mesh with the recycled clothing movement. Are you able to source recycled fibers? And what are some of the more exciting happenings in that field?
So, yes, I do have an amazing group of vendor partners all across America that are total techie innovators in slow fashion. So slow fashion and innovation doesn't seem to work together, but it really does, because if you're talking about, trying to be efficient and clean and honest and, abide by all American labor laws, you've got to have innovation. There are recycled fiber mills that I can purchase yarns from. I haven't done that yet because I just haven't, expanded into a large range of offerings. I'm mostly in cotton and wool and hemp at the moment, but there are suppliers that come from America. They are spinning in Mexico. They're spinning in Canada. The cut and sew waste from the apparel industry, they actually go to the factories. They collect that cut and sew waste. They shred that up, and then they add a little bit of raw material, whether it be wool or cotton or hemp, one of the other, or Tencel or Modal, one of the other natural fibers that I work with, and they blend it into other yarns that I can use.
Have you heard of any big retailers, national chains, that are going to start sourcing recycled fibers? The reason I ask is because when you think about a consumer who might favor recycled clothing, mm-hmm. their options are going to be much greater when they're in a city. But somebody who's a consumer in rural America, the suburbs, the exurbs, they're going to be limited to these malls and the national brands, which are boxing them in terms of their consumer choices.
There is an abundance of recycled plastic. And that, we have way too much plastic globally, and a very small percentage of that plastic is being recycled into apparel products.
Such as?
A fleece. It's, you know, a polar fleece, t-shirts that are, you know, polyester t-shirts, all the athletic wear. They're putting it into leggings. They're putting it into raincoats. But it's plastic. And the jury's not out yet on how plastic is being consumed in the environment. There's way too many fibers in the ocean. I posted that on my blog. It's these tiny little microfibers are actually the result of this plastic clothing growth, a huge growth in plastic clothing.
So fleece is plastic.
Fleece is plastic. Fleece is made from plastic. And it's a microfiber. The problem with microfibers is it ends up every time you throw it into your washing machine and your dryer, an abundance of that fiber breaks off and just goes into our water system. It's so fine that it's not being properly digested or processed, and it ends up in our oceans, and it ends up in our biosystems. And it actually, microplastic is ending up in our blood system.
And it doesn't biodegrade.
It doesn't biodegrade, and nobody knows how to filter it out, not even from our blood. So it's a problem that I would rather avoid, and I do love the idea of recycling plastic because it's in such an abundance in our world of consumerism today. But I just think it's too dangerous to play with right now. And since there is these new innovations in recycled natural fibers, and they are pulping our t-shirts and turning it into new fiber, I think that's where the innovation is.
And how do you approach water usage in your product?
Water usage in the product, in textiles in general, is extremely high, and that's one of the places where the toxicity is a huge problem globally. And so I have been working with a water treatment company that I am bringing to some dye houses to try and recycle their water to 97% return.
Lydia Wendt, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex. It was great to be here.
There's a smart young woman on a light blue screen who comes into my house every night. She takes all the red, yellow, orange, and green, and she turns them into black and white. But you tease, you flirt, and you shine all the buttons on your green. You can please yourself, but somebody's gonna get it. Better cut off all identifying labels before they put you on the torture table. 'Cause somewhere in the quiz.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Michael Townsend. He's the founder and CEO of Earthshine Solutions, which is a management consultancy that focuses on sustainability efforts. Mike, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you very much, Alex. It's a pleasure to join you and your listeners.
So you just edited a book/journal called Reframing the Game, The Transition to a New Sustainable Economy. So why did you put this publication together, Reframing the Game? What was the motivation behind it?
That's a good question, Alex. I think years ago, I'd become increasingly concerned with what was going on in the world with the financial crisis and the ongoing effects on that. And it seemed to me that a lot of people were raising questions around our financial system, our system of economy and commerce, and seeing, is this a system that's going to work? Can it deliver for us going forward? Can it meet the challenges of our time around climate change, resource allocation and distribution, and in terms of wealth and equality? So many questions were being asked. So I set out on a journey in search of capitalism 2.0. What would a better system look like? And I was surprised at what I found, both in terms of the solutions that are already available. You know, the more I looked, the more I found, but also something important for the soul, genuine cause for hope, generated by a very real sense that a new system for economy was already manifesting Pockets of great ideas and new practices going on around the world. And if you were to join this up into a great new picture, you could see that actually a new way was possible. A quiet revolution, if you like, was already underway if we could allow it to flourish. So it seemed to me quite important that we start bringing people together from the world of business, from the world of education and academia, to try and kind of thrash out what the issues were and what the solutions were and how we could take things forward. So this journal stroke book, Reframing the Game, is the next step, if you like, on this journey in bringing people together to explore key issues, topics around, well, what's the purpose of our economy? Is it just about growth and GDP? And we should all just carry on focusing on that? Or are there a wider range of goals and indicators that would make for a healthier economy and a more balanced and natural life for us? That's one area. So there's a great piece in there by Isabel Sebastian, where she explores the sort of different models that are available and how we can actually move towards a more holistic approach for our economy.
Yeah, she calls it a well-being economy.
That's right. And it's all about changing the focus for the economy and having different indicators, but also changing the narrative, the story and purpose for our economy. Is it that we should just exist to work so that we serve the economy and we keep facilitating growth? Or is it that we should look at this the other way around? Should we design the economy to deliver what it is that we all need across society, communities, including business, including in our communities, such that the economy serves us, not the other way around? So I think Isabel Sebastian does a great job to show us different models and to come up with some practical suggestions for the business world and for policy leaders around how we could reframe the economy around well-being, not just growth.
Right. And Sebastian writes, is corporate social responsibility or CSR enough in a new economy? And that really spoke to me in a lot of ways, in that we cover a lot of CSR efforts here in Sea Change Radio. But it seems like as more and more of the largest corporations are getting on board with the idea of having corporate social responsibility being a piece of their puzzle, we need to go beyond that. It's great that they've embraced CSR principles in a lot of ways, but it also makes me suspicious that so much of it is window dressing when these companies are maybe pushing mom and pop businesses to the side.
Absolutely. It's a big theme through this project and what we're taking forward into the future. What's the business of the future look like? And CSR, yeah, it's probably a necessary step on the journey. It allows companies to kind of engage in the conversation about what they need to do more holistically for the business. But yes, you're absolutely right, Alex, that so much of it is window dressing. It can be great PR. It can be some genuine improvements too, but usually they're fairly incremental. Maybe some minor reductions in energy usage or carbon footprint, waste, and so on. But the real purpose of the business can often still be quite destructive. Some of the mainstream banks, you know, their business models are have wreaked havoc through the world. You know, we need to have a complete overhaul on the way that businesses work and operate. So we do need to move beyond CSR. It's a good stepping stone, but it's like when you go to school, when you're a kid, you learn some stuff in the early grades, but that's not the end of your journey, is it? You know, there's a whole lot more you've got to get down and get sorted. And I think the business world going forward, there's going to be a lot more around the purpose of business and business strategy and how that needs to change in the focused on the challenges we face in the world and on solving problems for society.
A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. There's room at the top, they are telling you still.
First you must learn how to smile as you kill. If you want to be like the folks on the hill. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me.
Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Presidio Graduate School in San Francisco, offering MBA and MPA degrees in sustainable management. Learn more at presidio.edu.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to management consultant Michael Townsend. So Mike, can you give us some examples from both the public and the private sectors in what you're talking about in terms of trying to transform the economic value from a one that's built entirely on growth as its barometer for success into one that's a well-being economy? Why don't you first talk about some government policies that you think are good templates for us to try to replicate elsewhere, and then maybe turn to the business world if you can.
If we go to the piece that Isabel Sebastian wrote, she's been quite influenced by the work that's gone on in Bhutan with the Gross National Happiness Index. So in Bhutan, they're already working and living by this model where they're not just thinking about growth. They're actually measuring indicators of well-being and happiness for the people in Bhutan and making sure their policies are joined up in being able to deliver on these indicators so that they can actually say whether they've got an economy that's working for the people or not. And there's a whole range of other different models that we could draw from. And I think the purpose of this at this stage is to say, look, there are different ways of doing it. It doesn't have to be just about GDP. That's really important to get those goals and the purpose of the economy defined wherever you are in the world. It'll drive everything else. So I think that's, I think, starts to address things policy-wise. Moving into the sort of business zone, this is really important as well. We need to change the story of business. Probably since Milton Friedman's famous essay around 1970, I think it was published in New York Times, where he basically said the purpose of business is to maximize shareholder returns. You know, that's been the kind of dialogue, you know, about business. When I was at business school as well in the 90s, you know, that was the thing, you know, everything you did was around maximizing shareholder return. Now I think we've seen that model as flawed and we need to move to new models of business success. And it's most interesting to see people like Richard Branson, who's obviously a very well-known and respected entrepreneur, a very successful businessman. A businessman who's always also had his fair share of challenges and scrapes, but nonetheless, he's quite pioneering. So he's set up what is known as the B team to redefine what business is about and what business success looks like. And we see the re-emergence of the cooperative movement since the financial crisis, where people want to take a stake in the company they're working in, and they're prepared to put the hours in as long as they get the rewards as well. And they can also make decisions for the longer term success for their communities that they operate within, and maybe some of the decisions, the difficult decisions that are needed around the environment too.
When you talk about Friedman's book and trying to maximize shareholder value, it brings me back to a discussion I had last month at a conference. I was seated next to a woman who is a director of sustainability at a tar sands company up in Alberta, Canada. And I asked her if it was frustrating trying to get good environmental policy and climate change realities on board with her management team. And she said, actually, our company, like our CEO, is very much embraces the realities of climate change. But anytime we try to put in good environmental practices or try to diversify our portfolio out of the most profitable short-term businesses like oil and gas, our shareholders revolt and they get mad and they want their short-term returns. So this whole idea of trying to maximize shareholder value as part of the capitalist paradigm can be quite hampering when we have to look at things in a long-term perspective if we want to be doing the right things for the planet.
Absolutely. And so there you hit on a really important issue, and that's the shareholders. You know, we need different models for sustainable investment.
What would be a better model within the shareholder idea? Like if you wanted to buy into a company as a shareholder of a company, let's say you wanted to buy Coca-Cola stock, is there a way to change shareholders' expectations, or do we need to do away with the whole shareholder model altogether in your mind?
There are changes already taking place. We're seeing some investment portfolios who are taking more holistic views around investments, and they're using the what's known as ESG metrics, environmental, social, and governance metrics, so more holistic indicators around investment performance. And they're concerned not just with, you know, is if I invest in company A, are they going to then sort of mess up the planet? Although that might be a moral concern for them, they're more concerned with, is there going to be an adverse impact on the value of that investment? If I put money into company A and they do mess up the planet, then are they then going to incur some sort of future financial liability that will make that investment, that asset, perform less well? So they're really being smart. They're taking a sort of holistic view about all the things that will impact on the value and the future performance of that asset. We also see something else going on, which is quite interesting. And we see Bill McKibben and his movement, the 350.org, where they're persuading people to divest from those investments which are messing up the planet. And of course, they're focused on fossil fuels. That's great. We then need a whole bunch of investors to then address the question, well, if we divest from that, what should we invest in? What's the sort of future smart investment? And it's interesting now to see people like Bill Gates. He's recently doubled his investment in renewable energies. So I think these things are already starting to shift. But your question about whether you should do away with the whole kind of share ownership model is also quite relevant. There are limitations around it. And I think cooperatives also lead to a kind of healthy ecosystem for investment as well, where people can put money into their businesses, their local businesses, be members as employees, and also gain a share of the rewards, because we have a major problem as well with the distribution of the results from our economies. There's growing inequality in the US. There's certainly growing inequality in the UK. A few years ago, the OECD put out a report that showed that the UK had the fastest growing divide between rich and poor in the so-called developed world. Now I'm ashamed to see that going on in my own country. So rather than putting sort of taxation arrangements on things and trying to redistribute wealth that way, why not have people getting the wealth from their own businesses? You know, it's not just about big corporations. It's about people having a stake in the place they work. So I'd like to see more variety, I suppose, in the ownership model. So the pressure's not just on this sort of shareholder capitalist model.
Mike Townsend, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you, Alex. It's an absolute pleasure, and I hope to share more with you in the future.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by the JBs, Elvis Costello, and John Lennon. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.